Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Sexy is boring. Let's be terrifying.
Hi, Corinne Cronfley here to tell you about today's sponsor, Sucrabe. Sucrabe is a women-owned and operated perfumery that is vegan and cruelty-free. Sucrabe is witchy and sometimes irreverent. Expect perfumes like Sweatpants Goblin, Not Today, Satan, and I Come From a Long Line of Terrifying Women. Sucrabe small batch perfumes are not like any other, but are broadly split into five scent styles, including classic scents that pass the test of time, nerdy scents for all the self-professed nerds out there, witchy scents that are mysterious and potiony, goth scents for those who like it dark and mysterious, and femme scents, the classically floral and sweet scents, but we recommend them for anyone of any gender. You can even find Blood and Bone and Unknown Roads, which are two amazing scents for our dear friends over at Old Gods of Appalachia. Also, as an added bonus, right now you can get an extra free dram of one of their scents if you spend over $25 and by using our unique Magnus code by going to rustyquill.com/perfume and following the instructions. Thanks, and enjoy today's episode.
Hi there, Mike here, voice of Tim Stoker from the Magnus Archives, and today I'd like to invite you to listen to Fiction from the Shadows of an Alternate Appalachia in Old Gods of Appalachia. Winner of Audioverse Awards, including Best New Storytelling Production and Best Writing of a New Storytelling Production, Old Gods of Appalachia is a non-linear, intricately woven Appalachian eldritch podcast brought to you by Deep Nerd Media. In this cosmic horror podcast, Appalachia is where hearts are good, hands are strong, and no one wants to talk about what sleeps beneath. Follow generations of granny witches and their families as they stand against the rising tide of the inner dark. Find Old Gods of Appalachia wherever you sip the wines of fine audio entertainment. Visit www.rustyquill.com or www.oldgodsofappalachia.com for more information.
Hello and welcome to this Magnus Archives Editor's Commentary episode. I'm Lowry and I produced the Magnus Archives from about midway of season four, not sure when I started actually. And with me, I have some of the editors who worked on the show. Would you like to introduce yourselves, editors?
Yes, hello, I'm Annie Fitch. I was a vocal editor for Magnus starting from the end of season four and running all the way through season five.
It's Elizabeth here, editor, I guess starting from season two, and then of course Visionary and Dreamweaver from season five onwards.
Yes.
And I'm the gremlin, the overvocal editor, and I took up around 166.
That's season five, right?
Yeah.
And we're still making you do vocal cut edits. You're welcome, Nico.
I don't really want to leave. This is my home now.
Yeah, so what we're doing here is, I mean, you probably gathered from the title, we're going to be listening to some episodes that these people have edited and just going to be chatting about them. I'm going to be taking a backseat because I didn't edit them, but I just wanted to be involved. Are we all ready to listen to some tracks?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Trip down memory lane.
Yes! Opening with it. So this was my first episode that I ever edited.
And what is this?
This is 154, Bloody Mary.
Oh, right. Hello, again. Look, sorry, pal. A false alarm this time. Oh, unless... Peter! Look, Peter...
Martin!
John, God, don't do that.
Sorry, I just...
No, it's fine. You just surprised me. That's... Jesus, are you all right?
I just feel like I have
hell.
To say that oh, Annie is pulling some really nostalgic
right,
faces.
I can't weak. Hungry, I guess, sort of.
Did you say
I've been trying to avoid being... sticking to old statements. Thank you for your little intervention, by the way.
Look, I wouldn't have had to... If
this is an episode with two swears in it. What the hey?
In the bloopers for this one, Alex did a little jingle about how we met our quota for season four, and maybe season five.
Has that made it into any of the blooper reels? I feel like it should.
The problem is that the song also involved the violent act that is described at the end of this episode as the way to quit the archive, and I think Alex felt weird singing about that and putting that out on a blooper. I think that was the final verdict on it.
Oh, that's very fair.
This one in particular, I have been itching to talk about since I edited it as my first edit, because I had so much fun specifically with the take selection in this conversation between John and Martin, because Alex had, you know, there's like four takes of this, and Alex did a variety of different kind of like emotional perspectives on it. And I got to cherry pick almost line by line the ones that made him the most like cruel to John. I really wanted to mess with people where if they really tried to listen to the detail, all of Alex's lines after the reveal are him being a little bit deliberately twisting the knife or just being mean about stuff, which I felt really fun to do that as the first edit.
I feel like that's so bold as well for your first edit. I love it.
Well, because I mean, one of the things when Alex trained me was he was like, if I put a thing in the notes, take selection, do the one I say. Other than that, pick whatever, you know, make an executive decision and pick whatever you think sounds good. Because, you know, as a vocal editor, you're supposed to be like somewhat in control of that to whatever degree.
It's one of like the benefits of doing most of the vocal cuts during lockdown is that there's no mic bleed.
Right.
So what I imagine beforehand, you're kind of confined to their reactions. You now have like, you can make anything react off anything and make the length longer or shorter. It was incredibly daunting at the start, but by the end of it, it's like, aha,
yeah,
I'm going to make him incredibly awkward.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even in this one, this was pre-lockdown, but Johnny and Alex just talk so quietly when they're in studio that there was almost no bleed anyway. So it's right from this point onward is where I was very deliberately trying to be like, where's Alex being the most mean?
Yeah.
Because some of them he was like really sad or like heartbroken, or there was even a take where he was like, he did like the end of it as like a more sympathetic type thing. And I was like, nah, none of that. Martin's not being nice here.
Yeah. Well, I think Martin as a character always understood their relationship better than John did.
Yeah.
I think John always lies to himself a little bit about how he actually feels about things. So,
yeah.
I think like that ties back to Martin being part web or was chosen by the web at one point.
Mm-hmm.
I think the funniest thing about Martin, editing Martin, is that so much of him is everything he says outside the lines. So like all the stutters and the cracks and like the sighing. And I've always adored that the most about Martin. Like I never grew tired of editing Martin at all.
He's all inflection, that Alex.
You did the solo Martin episode as well, didn't you?
Oh, God. Yeah. I put that in a blooper reel somewhere where Alex just lost a plot by the end of that.
Is he here?
Oh, yes.
Up ahead.
Ah, this is a Nico choice, yeah. Right?
The amount of takes Alex did for that whistle.
I hate it.
It's like you're trying to grow ugly. That won't do. You're better than that.
I really hate this.
See, what you can hear in the background there is a water feature, one of those bamboo ducking water things. I can't remember what they're called.
Ah.
And what I really wanted to put in, aside from that, is I thought Jared Hopworth could have been a chicken fancier. That was the dream.
A chicken fancier?
I think so. I think he absolutely would have been a chicken fancier in the apocalypse.
Down inside and really feel that fear.
Oh.
Let God out.
Alex wouldn't let me, though. I did ask.
So unreasonable.
Buzz.
Jared Hopworth is like one of the fan favourites for like monster avatars or whatnot.
Yeah.
But more than that, like the setup for being just like a garden of, well, flesh. I was waiting to hear the soundscape for it because the soundscape just like, it nails it.
Yeah, it's horrible in the best way.
I always had a hard time with Hopworth. I always had a hard time with Jared because the first time he's voiced, I mostly listened to the show on headphones at work and I work at a theme park. So it's quite loud where I am most of the time, which meant that this pitched down Alex voice in headphones with other noise going on, nearly unintelligible. It's not that it's not clear and everything. It's just that it's so low that it blends into the sort of general crowd hum.
Well, the first one is in the hallways and it has that echo. And I think if you add the echo in it, you've got a little bit more muffling with it.
Yeah.
But also Alex did about 10 different takes of like the whistling and whatnot, because he said in the recording like he knew this was going to be really hard to understand because it's Jared, so he tried his normal voice, then his Cockney voice, and then like a ill Alex, and he actually was ill that day as well, so he started off kind of fresh and his voice just deteriorated. He kind of hit a wall and it was just like all croaky horrible messiness.
If I recall correctly, I think he recorded this the day before he was supposed to be recording another just like normal Martin scene and then couldn't do the Martin, or at least either couldn't do it or like at the start was like, it's all right, my voice will come back. I was like, are you sure? We need to start now.
I vaguely knew who Jared was back then, but it's like I really wanted to know how we do half the monster voices and whatnot and what wizardry via the plugins and things we do. So I was really curious about Jared. And, like, obviously it's like we pitch it down and whatnot, but I was wondering how much was Alex and how much was the effects?
You know, like, it's very much based on, I think, the lowest you can get from the actor, and then you start pitching it down and potentially chorusing it or something else on top. But that was an Alex special. He had designed that before I started doing the sound effects. You know, I started that in season 5, so some of the stuff was always past him because it was like, well, you did it the first time. Like, you know what you did.
Tell me what you did.
My favourite thing for Daisy's death, Faye, is that somebody got them to record just animal noises. So there's like, there's just a recording of them making like all these growls and like wolf, monster, beast sounds.
They're so good at that.
Yeah, we had some of that. And then there was a really good sort of bear eating kind of noise or that someone else had made as well. So there's about 3 different things that was used for Daisy to make her more monstrous.
Right, let's get on with it then.
Oh, can you hear that wind? That wind sounds so nice.
Is this one of your choices, Elizabeth?
Oh, it's just, yeah, it is. But I'm just like, it's so hot today.
Wouldn't it be nice?
It'd be worse.
I thought you were like, do you hear that soundtrack? God, it's good.
Worse, it got worse.
Martin,
much
be
worse.
Polite. Hello.
Pleasure, yes. Hello. I am Dr. Doe, Jane. Welcome into my hospital, Inspector.
Inspector?
You have come here to over-observe, yes? To Inspector.
I suppose so, yes.
Then follow. Let us tour our well-being center. Keep your screams inside, if you want to be polite.
Right.
The performer for Dr. Doe.
So good.
It was just so much
beautiful
fun.
Beautiful building.
So much fun. Me.
Well, even making them sort of more monstrous, it was actually like just a slight, you know, tweak to...
Don't need to do much to it, huh?
Yeah, it was just like same pacing, just the performance was so good. It was a fun performance.
This one was fun to edit too because I got sort of a little bit of everything fun. I got scared Martin. I got a very stock John statement that was, you know, interesting and gross. And then Dr. Doe was so easy to edit. And then I also got to do Breakin.
Mabel Syrup was the actor for Dr. Doe.
That was it.
Yeah, she was great. So good.
It was one of the ones I remember being fun to do the SFX for because, yeah, I mean, I just went hell for leather in terms of making it really like sores, you know, band sores. To give it that comparison to the other hospital, which had been much more about psychological kind of abuse in hospitals, whereas this was like quite physical abuse. But that meant you got to find loads of like nice sounds for that. And
yeah.
Also, I got to hand off to Alex, I think, 22 layers of audio.
Oh, wow.
I remember at the time he was like, there's no way you need this many layers. And he got to the end of it and he's like, oh, yeah, okay.
This is the one I remember most clearly being on the RQO early access channel at the time it uploaded and just watching the sort of fur of people rolling in the live comments as it goes and like really hammering down. And everyone was just like, because I remember I was actually out at a restaurant picking up breakfast while people were listening to it. And I'm just scrolling on my phone. Every like third comment was like, oh, God, the soundscape. Why? Oh, I don't like this.
There was chanting of knife wife or scissor wife or something.
Oh, yeah. Knife wife was one of my favorite terms that came out of the show. Knife wife.
I'm so proud, Elizabeth, that you just like, this is the right thing to do. And like Alex was like, is it? Oh, yes, it is.
I think because initially I'm like, can I go really organic? And he's like, I don't know. And then I'm like, can I make her out of knives? And he was like, no. So like, maybe I just will anyway. Why not? So, I think she kind of works. It is interesting to think then of the evolution of those anatomy students is that some of them were like, I created a heart and I created blood flow and everything else. And now I've just inserted knives into all of me. That's how I live my life.
There was a lot of really interesting Easter eggs in this episode, too, because that's one of them that this is like an anatomy student, but it's never really directly referenced. There's also, I remember when they were doing notes, there's a few sentences that are very grammatically weird that come out of Dr. Doe. And there was a lot in the recording of like, can we make that weirder? Can we make that a little bit more uncomfortable? So like at the beginning, you heard the you're here to inspector thing.
Mm.
And Alex was very much like, no, that is not an error. Don't correct it. Say that because this is a person who's just slightly off, speaking just slightly wrong. And it just added the air of creepiness even more to it.
Mm. It's a really fun episode.
I think that's one of my favorites.
Now settle back. Try to look intentional.
What does that mean?
They're going to expect a suitable elaborate scene when they arrive. Monstrous to blow. I'd hate to disappoint them.
Right. So, were you thinking something like this or...
My apologies for the inconvenience, but appearances are everything, Martin. Now, if you'll excuse me, I need to change into something more suitable.
It is so very important to prime your audience.
Annabelle Kane.
Hello, John. Vasira. Calm down, Martin. You wouldn't want to.
I love that we're all just listening.
Well, it's just such a good scene.
It feels so long ago, and yet also feels like no time has passed at the same time. Because 197, for me at least, was the longest one to edit. Mm. Just because there were so many different reactions going off after over everyone. We had to do two different takes because we didn't know how we were going to position them in the room. So there's some with like the shouting over as if it's a huge echoey chamber. And then there's other ones where we made it sound like they're all really close to each other. Elizabeth, you did so much prep for this episode.
Yeah.
Like so much.
I knew that the spider area, like the giant web, and obviously the end scene with the panopticon kind of thing, they were sort of things that I was had my ear out for the background, kind of like what would the background be? They need to be kind of different. I think it was like the funnest background in that it's very staticky. It's very much the tape noises and the, to me, like little skittering spider noises. Yeah, I've got a really great sort of visual for that. And I think what I also remember as I was editing it was like, oh my God, Johnny set this up, that we knew that you could make these webs out of tape when we had that episode, the one about the filmmaker. All of this had been prepped in our head seasons ago, that a web made of tape and, well, partly made of tape was totally a thing. It's one of those moments where I just love the craft that he put into it. I think just those little things.
Yeah. Mm. I recently started my first re-listen through from the beginning in a very long time because I'm introducing some of my day job coworkers to the show. Getting through the first Hilltop Road episode, the one with Ivo Lensig, where he pulls down the tree and everything, I know that he didn't, that the plan for the end at that point changed a couple times from where he was. That's the first 10 episodes. So it wasn't really quite nailed down then. He just knew some things about it. But he hit so many different beats. That one episode singularly lays out at least one episode in all of the remaining seasons to come. There's at least one thing that is about things mentioned in that episode, including some of the stuff that's happening in this one. It's very, very interesting to listen back to, because like you said, it's just the Hilltop Road and the web had just so much setup poured into it, and just so well, just little bits here and there putting it together the whole show up to this point.
I think I was silly because I missed, you know, there's the episode I think of the cleaner who goes basically into another dimension.
Yeah.
And for some reason in my brain, it never dawned on me that that's what had happened. And I was like, you know, she's missing all these people. It doesn't look quite right. And in my brain, I was like, oh, it's just a fear thing that's happening. No, she's now slipped into this alternative universe.
Oh. Ah. Oh, Christ, what now?
Sorry,
this is another of my favourites.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't have made a statement before we got on the ladder.
That's not how it works.
Fine, I'm out then. You coming, Martin?
So my choice is to jump off a cliff or cling to it while John does a statement.
And then jump off it, yeah.
Right, yes. For
fuck's sake. Fine.
Okay.
Oh, Alex acting again.
On three. One.
I love the look on Lowry's face right now. She's freaking out.
Yeah. Or just go then.
I remember listening to this first and being like, oh my God, I just felt every one of those jumps off the cliff.
Yeah. Frank absolutely murders this episode.
Down and down and down again. Rung after rung after rung to rung.
I picture Frank forever to react that way regardless if they were Basira or not anyway.
Exactly.
I mean, that is kind of true as well, yeah.
So this was my last episode that I edited. My first 154, my last is this one, 198. And I was actually very, very excited about that for a couple reasons, because this is the final John statement of the show, kind of. Because I don't really count the monologue in 200. I mean, it sort of is, but this is the last, like, just vanilla statement. This is just a statement. And it's also, I was always, my favorite power was always the Vast. And so ending the vanilla statements of the show on the Vast made me happy. And yeah, just like the bit where they're on the ladder there and they all go from these, you know, their normal Magnus takes where they're all close to the mic and very quiet and kind of fried out and everything, to just being like,
The ladder,
Like way back and yelling from the mic. It was fun. And again, just Frank slayed every part of this episode that they were doing. It was so good.
In my brain, I was like, the thing that I had a little question about that I answered fairly quickly was actually, where is the tape player? Apparently it lives with John, but importantly, John doesn't take a backpack to Hilltop Road. He is not a guy who brings a backpack along. Martin clearly does. Martin loses the backpack at the web. There's no more backpacks, guys. Like, they're walking back without backpacks. So I'm like, where is the tape player? Is it like, you know, kind of visualizing that? And you're like, well, I guess it's just attached to John some way, which means that when, of course, he jumps, the tape player's going with him, which meant that you got, you know, I got to do that great skydiving wind effect as he's heading down, which I really enjoyed.
I always picture Martin's backpack to be like Sam and Frodo in Lord of the Rings, just have like a little cup hanging off and everything.
That jump of John, that's one of my favorite like tape clicks in the whole series, is he goes, well, I guess that's it, jumps, and then you hear click. There's that like nice fade in click. It's like, yes, sounds so good. And then click. And it was so weird, because then after this episode, after editing this episode, I did the math, and I vocal cut exactly 10% of this show, of the actual core 200 episodes. I had exactly 20 vocal cuts done, and this was the 20th, so that was kind of nice.
That sounds so neat. I like to think that, Elizabeth, didn't we remind Johnny? Am I misremembering that?
I think what happened was he had said something that the episode was going to be set somewhere, and we were like, oh no, it's listed as this in the spreadsheet. And he was, oh yes, okay, it's going to be like this. It's going to be like a ladder. And then I remember at the time we were joking, oh, well, you know, like we should make them jump, just jump off the cliff. And he was like,
I mean, he might have thought of it anyway, but I like to think that, you know... Definitely, yes.
Look, John, as fun as all this melodrama is enough. We both know that you don't have it in you.
That was for Sasha.
John, wait.
For Tim.
Please, John, don't.
Gert. And all the others.
Please, John. I don't want to die.
Neither did they. But no one escapes at the end.
Got to add the really unrealistic knifing sound. You never hear a knife sound when you're being knifed.
Listeners, you may take great satisfaction in knowing that Alex made Ben die again and again and again and again.
Sitting in on this recording was great. Like, he was great every time, but it was...
burning, retching on the smog, but hide. It is not real, but still it come falling through the pitch black dark.
That little bit at the end where John gets... control possessed, what have you, I don't know the right technical term. Johnny's first take was like pretty much spot on. I'm assuming it's because he probably rehearsed that so many times off recording, off camera, whatnot.
I don't know if, I mean, if he did, he did it secretly.
Yeah.
Because he recorded almost all of the statements for season 5 without a director, just by himself. I'm not sure if he did for the last one. I know I remember asking if he wanted Alex for that last one. I think he did it by himself.
He did get quite good at doing the statements by himself. His monologue statements, the way that they progressed through at-home recordings from a vocal editor perspective was really dramatic. Between when he was first at home just going, well, we'll see how this goes, to like, you know, by the time we did 198, it was like recording started. Hey, it's Johnny recording the statement for 198. You know the drill. Reading everything twice. Go. I think he thought and was right about not needing... necessarily another set of ears on it, because he would just do it twice and give these little variations in there. There was always something usable.
I'm getting sucked into the jungle? Question mark, Elizabeth?
The soundscape for this statement is just magnificent.
Yeah, freaking awesome.
As I think I've said it before, it's the first one where I actually get to do something that sounds a little bit beautiful rather than just supposed to be like basically a bit awful.
Yeah.
Because Salaces is, it's a country house, but there's only very quiet amount of birds. Yeah, I really enjoyed the statement part of this. The thing that really struck me earlier with this bit was actually I remember asking Alex whether Elias, because I remember the death scene for Elias was quite long, and it was as long as there, basically. But when you get it without any like sound effects behind it, it's just like Ben going, ugh, I do remember like going back to Alex and going, is this actually like, do you want such a long death? And he's like, yep. So because like, I was like, is it a little bit melodramatic? And I'm like, I guess in hindsight, I mean, it is the final death scene. So like,
yeah.
And then he says, I think the last words are supposed to be good luck. But he says it in such a way that it's like, I didn't even pick up until I read the transcript.
That was the thing, because like Ben did so many takes where he could hear it. And Alex said, and it's like, okay, just give me one where you, people can't understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
And then that's the one Alex wanted.
It's a difficult episode. We've got the Elias death at the start. Then we've got, you know, the whole thing where John needs to, is he transformed? Not quite. Like, but there is some kind of power thing that happens, right?
What is he? He says he becomes the pupil or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's never had like an effect applied to him other than static for when he's doing a bit of magicalness. So then it was like, well, how much do you apply an effect to him post becoming the pupil?
Mm-hmm.
Don't think I added much. I think there was just a little bit of chorusing on little bits. Then goes into that statement, which was completely different from what we'd done previously.
Right.
Then we destroy the Panopticon, and then we go to an entirely different scene, so with an entirely different emotional energy. It's a pretty packed episode for probably like 22 minutes or something. Like,
It was very much like a hot seat almost thing, because like the first few scenes are so rapidly done. I mean, yes, the death of Elias, that's very Shatner-esque, and that takes him forever to die, but apart from that... You have that happen, then you have John tell Rosie just to go away. So then Rosie goes away, and it's like, oh, hi, Hannah. First time editing you. Oh, okay, bye, Hannah. Never editing you again. Okay, bye. Then it's, oh, God, that scene with Martin just telling John off to no end. And I put in, I used to take Alex Wanted, but I took all the voice cracks out of every other take. Then you got the John monologue / statement. And then right at the very end is just the survivors. See, it was just like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
My favorite memory of 200 was the all of the final scripts dropped a few weeks before the recordings. All the final scripts got uploaded. And it was like 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning over here. I just couldn't sleep. I was just having insomnia. And I saw the ping that the scripts dropped. And then I immediately pinged Nico on Teams. It was like, Nico, 200 dropped. Read it with me.
Yeah.
I love that to me. That is like, I would have been like, oh, right, I got the script. Right, I just need to let people know. And like not really realizing that it's such a big thing. Just be like, yeah, 200's there.
The circle people who knows what happens just grows bigger because it starts off with like Johnny Knights and gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And me and Annie were just like, who else can we talk to? Who cares? Because Laura, you don't listen to it. And Elizabeth was like super busy doing soundscaping. So it's just me and Annie in the DM just going like, oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I knew where we were going to.
Yeah.
But I'd never really questioned exactly how the story was going to end. Although I could tell because I knew we were going to the tunnels. I knew we were going to the Panopticon, but then to Hilltop Road and then back to the Panopticon. But I didn't push from Johnny or Alex exactly how it was going to end. So, like, my first knowledge was because, yeah, I didn't go to the scripts because I was so busy normally doing the edits that were coming up, that my first thing would be listening to the vocal cut that I got sent and being like, oh, that's what happens. And I remember that happening when I did the vocal cut for 160. And like, you know, the world ending. And like, you know, I'm listening through, I'm making, you know, because I used to listen through and make sort of small cuts as I'm listening through the first time to just get rid of stuff I knew we weren't using. And then getting towards the end, I'm like, realizing what was about to happen and just like messaging Johnny and being like, I can't believe you did this.
A thing to note as well about the pandemic and whatnot is that we were asking for a lot of pickups, specifically from Johnny at the start. And very quickly, it went from, I don't know how to DM Johnny. Johnny's like, he plays John and he's the writer and he's Johnny. And then very, very quickly, it's like, Johnny, answer your DMs. I need you to be dramatic for this sentence again, please. Thank you. You get quite warmed and normal to him very, very quickly.
He's all right, isn't he?
He's more likely to say sorry for not getting onto something, you know, straight away. It'd be like, how dare you contact me?
How dare you disturb me? Yeah. Back to the editing dungeon.
I have enjoyed this so, so much. Thank you, everyone.
That was very fun.
I really liked it. It's been nice to reminisce.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us and listening. We hope you enjoyed. And it's bye from us all. And join us next week for some form of content that I'm not sure what it is at the moment. But it'll be there. It'll be there because we can't let these people go. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
This episode is distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike 4.0 international license. For more information, visit rustyquill.com, tweet us at @TheRustyQuill, visit us on Facebook or email us at mail@rustyquill.com. Thanks for listening.
Sexy is boring. Let's be terrifying. Hi, Corinne Cronfley here to tell you about today's sponsor, Sucrabe. Sucrabe is a women-owned and operated perfumery that is vegan and cruelty-free. Sucrabe is witchy and sometimes irreverent. Expect perfumes like Sweatpants Goblin, Not Today, Satan, and I Come From a Long Line of Terrifying Women. Sucrabe small batch perfumes are not like any other, but are broadly split into five scent styles, including classic scents that pass the test of time. Nerdy scents for all the self-professed nerds out there. Witchy scents that are mysterious and potiony. Goth scents for those who like it dark and mysterious. And femme scents, the classically floral and sweet scents, but we recommend them for anyone of any gender. You can even find Blood and Bone and Unknown Roads, which are two amazing scents for our dear friends over at Old Gods of Appalachia. Also, as an added bonus, right now you can get an extra free dram of one of their scents if you spend over $25 and by using our unique Magnus code by going to rustyquill.com/perfume and following the instructions. Thanks, and enjoy today's episode.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.